Then went into the military because.
Oh man, I didn't see that. What branch did you go to?
Army.
Oh, I was in Army Reserve. Oh man,
yeah, I went in. You're going to hear this name a lot. I went in artillery, and then got voluntold to become a combat medic because they needed combat medics. Then went to jump school. And did that for quite a few years, almost 11 years, and actually got to do a green to gold program. And unfortunately,
hello everyone, welcome to the Career Education Learning Center podcast. I'm your host, Mitchell Rivers. I am thrilled and honored to have Sean Nesbitt on our show. Sean is a PhD student at Norfolk State University. How are you doing today, Sean?
I'm doing great. I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, thank you for coming on our show. Sean, you have such an expansive and long profile there with many activities and stuff you've been doing educational-wise and occupational-wise that I'm going to let you go into a little bit yourself with the audience. So tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your journey to your current career path.
Okay. I don't even know where to start.
Well, let's start with your graduating from high school. After high school, what college did you attend after high school?
I went to Virginia Wesleyan College. It's a private Christian conservatory in Norfolk, Virginia. It's now a university, which is still, it baffles me. It's hard to say Virginia Wesleyan University, VWU. but they have graduated themselves into the stratosphere. So studied chemistry there. Then went into the military because.
Oh man, I didn't see that. What branch did you go to?
Army.
Oh, I was in Army Reserve. Oh man,
yeah, I went in. You're going to hear this theme a lot. I went in artillery, and then got voluntold to become a combat medic because they needed combat medics. Then went to jump school, and. Did that for quite a few years, almost 11 years. Wow. And actually got to do a green to gold program. And unfortunately, life had another opportunity for me. And while attending graduate school at Old Dominion University, was driving to pick up some books and somebody ran a red light, hit me.
Oh no.
And did some damage to my back and my leg, and that was the end of it. Mm. So they discharged me while they could get me out as an enlisted man without, you know, branching me in, and that was the end of that. So I from there moved to New York City and was like, okay, great, what are we gonna do? And had a contract to become an educator with the city, and they froze the teaching contracts.
Oh man.
So I started going to all of the meetings with the teachers union, trying to figure out when things were going to be lifted. Ran into a company called ERN, Education Reform Now, and they were looking for people to run campaigns to work in underrepresented communities. Okay. The NYCHA housing, if you're familiar, it's the New York City Housing Authority. Okay. They basically, it kind of was advantageous. I could get into the meetings because I was part of the union. But more importantly, I had an understanding about how the education system really worked, right? So I did that, worked on several campaign initiatives, and really got to tell those communities what opportunities were really available for them, instead of just the, well, you can go to the school closest to you that's underfunded and doesn't have great opportunities. Like there's a, you know, great system that the wealthy families all know about that you can take advantage of. So, and then went from there to Red Horse Strategies. A lot of people that used to work on Hillary Clinton's campaign. We did some work with Cory Booker, Shaheen, and yeah, we did again education reform, and just tried to help put people in place that could really make a change in the world. And so from there, I moved from New York City to come down. Excuse me. So I'm gonna take a pause and go back for your editor. So from there, I came from New York City back down to Virginia to kind of go back to school. And I was gonna go back and become a nurse. It's, you know, kind of what I knew in the military. And was looking at different schools, and Norfolk State was not on my radar. Like an HBCU, what's that? Like, that's not, it's not on my radar. And I had applied to just every school you could possibly imagine, but they were all exactly the same. Like you would go into the school, you would make, you know, you would make an appointment and you would go in and they would just take you on this generic tour and you would ask questions and they would say the same thing. Well, you can go to our website for that. Send us an email. You can go to our web. I'm here. I'm here right now. Like, can't we? So I was on my way back from one down in North Carolina, and my mother-in-law was like, well, Norfolk State's on your way home. And I'm like, why not? Like, so I came in and I hopped into Norfolk State and I ran into Ricky. You know, I just came right up to the office and Ricky was there. He came out and was like, yeah. And, you know, and I said, hey, I've got some questions about your nursing program. Do you have a few minutes? I know I'm here unannounced. He's like, let's go see the campus. And he took me around. And every time I had a question, he either had the answer or, well, let's go over and talk to that person. Let's find out. Oh, you have a question about the nursing program? Let's go over to our nursing building. Let's find somebody in the nursing program. Let's answer that question. So by the time I got done with just the tour, I'm like, let's do this. So I put my deposit down for the school. I hadn't even applied here. Like, they had to generate a number for me because they're like, well, how do we even take his money?
Oh, they'll find a way, Sean. They'll find a way to take your money.
Oh, they did. No, and they did.
School and churches will always find a way to take your money. Like you said, they would generate something on the spot there.
And they did. And so I applied. And because it was like last minute and, you know, I hadn't really planned on coming here. Financial aid and work study and all that hadn't really been mapped out and planned for me ahead of time. So I missed the mark for work study.
Oh, man.
So I got approved the Friday, the last cutoff for work study, right? Everything was taken. Like I went down that list and everything was taken. But I'm like, you know, I've worked in, you know, I studied chemistry at Virginia Wesleyan. So I know the science department, they always need people to work in the labs, even if it's just setting up for the professors before class, you know. So I came over to our science department here, our research facility, and I came to the fifth floor where I'm sitting right now. And I went from one end of the hall to the other end, and I knocked on every single professor. And I made it to Dr. Naganova, who's now my principal investigator for my PhD program. And her husband were sitting in their office talking. Not there, it was his office, but, and I said, you know, nice to meet you. I'm a nursing student and I have work study hours, but I don't have a work study program. And I kind of explained it to him. And she said, come to my office, let's sit down and talk. So, you know, I told her this, how many hours I have. And she said, well, how many hours a week can you give me? I'm like, I don't know, 30, 40 hours a week. And she was like, wow, what? She goes, if you can give me 10 a week, I'll be happy. Keep your work study hours. I don't need them. I can fund you. I have my own funding. So she sent me over. She said, we're having a meeting today in like 2 hours. So go have lunch, come back, meet the team. If you like them, you find something interesting, then we'll get you contracted. We'll bring you in. So I spent the semester and she liked me.
Oh, okay. It's good. Yes.
She said, we're going to bring you into the physics program.
Wow.
You're going to be a physicist. So I talked to my wife and was like, hey, I'm switching to physics. And she's like, well, no, you're going to be a nurse because you have like 2 years. How long is this going to take you? And I'm like, we're going to add like another year and a half. but she wants me to go all the way through to my PhD. And she's like, okay, great. What does this mean for us? I'm like, well, it'll be 100% funded. She's like, well, it already is, you know, GI Bill and all that. Right. And I'm like, yeah, but this would be in addition to the already funded. And so we sat down and she's like, okay, you have 1 year. If things aren't going the way that they should be going, you go right back into the nursing program and you just go that way. I graduated summa cum laude.
Wow.
I graduated with an honors endorsement from the Robert C. Nasbaum Honors College. I currently have a 372 in my PhD program. Mm-hmm. And things are rocking and rolling. So here we are. Yeah.
That is fantastic. That's good. The way you explain things, and one reason when I seen your profile, that I knew you'd be a good guest, is because there are different ways to attain your educational goal. Mm-hmm. I went through a similar route, not as well as yours, and yours is fantastic. I love it. and very different because things happen in life. And I told my audience before, son, that things happen in life that you don't have no control over, but you have to adapt and overcome. And sometimes opportunities may come, we at least see them. You know, I went to a community college in Statesville because I got a full scholarship, Mitchell Community College. Then I transferred to Central Piedmont Community College here in Charlotte. And from there, I went to UNC Pembroke. And I was in the Army Reserve the whole time funding my college at the same time. And then before the semester I can graduate, there was Desert Shield, Desert Storm, 1991. I know now I'm telling my age. And 1991. And I didn't think I was going to be able to finish that semester, that fall semester, and I did. And so that was just a different route of attaining my educational goal. And so what I try to inform students, whether high school or college, is that everything's not going to go gravy. Everything's not going to go like, okay, I graduate here in 4 years. I go to a four-year school, graduate 4 years, hunky-dory. I get out, either I go to my master's or I go get a job and I get married, have a picket fence, 2 kids, boom, 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 and life is over and I'm great. That is not just realistic life there, you know. And you went to a roundabout way and going to a different route. And I try to express to them, you're going to change sometimes. And you did make that pivot change from nursing to physics. And, you know, and unfortunately for you, you at least had a partner there that said, hey, at least give you a year. You know, they say, no, how are we going to support this song? No, I don't want you to do this. No, that's it. She said, yes, at least give me a year, see what it's like. And you went and done great. So that's family support or spousal support is really important. And I think that a lot of past students that I've interviewed really stress how much that is mean to them to have that family support because you're going to go through tough times in college. So that is an amazing story. That's why I wanted you on my show for students to realize that everything is not, you know, biscuits and gravy, as we say in the South, or peanut butter and jelly, as I said when I was a kid. It's all different. Man. So, Sean, did you do an internship while you was in your undergrad or in your graduate studies, any type of internship or fellowship?
I did. I've done quite a few, actually. In my undergrad, I worked at Jefferson Laboratory. So my undergrad, so Dr. Naganova is my graduate school advisor, but she's not a undergraduate advisor. So yeah. I work with Dr. Salgado, who was my undergrad advisor. Mm-hmm. And, we were sitting in class one day. I had a lot of classes with him, because I also minored in astrophysics. And I was sitting in a class with him, and he had mentioned that he worked for Jefferson Lab. And I'm one of those that I don't wait for opportunities. Mm-hmm. If I hear something, I'm like, oh, that might help me out. And he was talking with another student about, oh, we have this internship I really want to bring you in on. And so I said, hey, got another spot. And he said, no, unfortunately, we just have the one. Mm-hmm. And they're really looking for programmers. And I know you're a physicist. We don't really have a lot of physics interns. Mm-hmm. So I said, cool. What program do you guys use? And he said, well, we use this program called Root. There aren't a lot of people that really use it. So I went and looked it up, and it's this program that they use through CERN, but it's 100% open source.
Mm.
So I went and learned it.
That's fantastic.
Because it's open source.
That's amazing. Yeah, I've seen open source stuff, but I can't just go in there and learn it. That is amazing. Yeah.
So the next year, it became available. And I started talking with him, and he said, I mean, it's kind of boring work, and it's, you know, fixing and breaking code, and it's a lot of analytical work. And I was like, great. I mean, as a physicist, I've got to know how to do this stuff, because if I do research, I've got to be able to analyze it, et cetera. You know, they did it for 2.5 years and got to work with a team out of Glasgow doing some low acceleration particle discovery work. When I graduated, right as I graduated, I got to go work at Lawrence Livermore National Lab doing shock physics, which I didn't know was a thing. you can actually, so if you shine light through different elements, you can tell the properties of them by the lines that are either omitted or emitted from the different elements on the periodic table. If you send shock waves through them, you can actually do the exact same thing.
Oh.
So we were building detectors using irregular patterns and not hitting them on target. And then we were analyzing the data to see if we could figure out under not so perfect conditions, if we could, as a team, analyze independent of each other and see if that data worked.
Okay.
Again, that analyzing data thing came back to help me out, and they used a totally different system, but again, all of it was based on Python. So it really came back to help. I worked as a researcher at Norfolk State University. They started a novel consortium, and that's something that I really, it's one of the things here that I love, and one of the things I'm really passionate about. So NOVEL stands for, it's kind of a mashup of words, and I love it. So it's Norfolk State, Virginia State, Elizabeth State, and Lawrence Livermore. So kind of the first little bit of all of those. And what it is three HBCUs, and then Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories. Wow. And it's really a consortium to help underprivileged and underrepresented individuals in the HBCU program have an opportunity to access like the DOE, to access these laboratories like Lawrence Livermore, Sandia, to get into these programs where there's a barrier that, let's be honest, a person like me doesn't necessarily have to fight as hard to get into. Now, I will say, I do when I walk in the door, because I can't walk in the door. I use forearm crutches. I'm from my knees down, I'm completely paralyzed. But that's okay. If I'm doing an interview like this, you know, I'm just another guy.
Yeah, you are. And, yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, and it's such a great consortium because we break that barrier apart. Mm-hmm. And it needs to happen more because mm-hmm. when I, even working at Jefferson Lab, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to be working at CERN, not at CERN, but with CERN.
Right.
I didn't quite have that level of responsibility. But I would be on these Zoom calls internationally. And it was just, sorry, there's a lot of white faces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And no females.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that I love about Naga Nova's team is a lot of international students,
mm-hmm.
a lot of females. There's two males on our team.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're up to three now. Mm-hmm. The rest are females. A lot of international students, a lot of black students,
mm-hmm.
A lot of students from Muslim countries.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. A lot of students from Indian countries. And I say it's great because if you get the same C white student mm-hmm. male perspective on every single approach to things,
right.
you're going to get the same C white mm-hmm. male answer to every single solution to everything. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you need different perspectives on answers and solutions and different things. So,
yeah, I agree with that.
I know that was a really long way.
That's fine. I try to, you know, inclusion is definitely diversity. You have to use that today because you get different perspectives. And I said this many times on the podcast and different ways of doing things. And the background that some people have may come with a different direction in solving different problems because mm-hmm. they had that problem before, something that you never had before. So they bring a different perspective that may help answer that question or that problem faster and easier for you than you doing your way. Like I said before, if you have people, like-minded people all the time, you know, and trying to solve a problem, they are going to see the problem from one perspective. But if you have different people with different perspectives, with different backgrounds, then you're going to look at that problem all different kind of ways to come for solution. And that solution may come much faster or even better or get solved because you have people with different backgrounds and different perspectives there. And so I always like to diversity myself. I want this podcast to be diverse because I want different perspectives on how people achieve their educational goals. Mm-hmm. And so I pride myself, or I should say, I want to include more diversity, women, minorities, international students, no matter where you come from, in our discussion because that helps solve different problems. And you may have the same problem here that you may have someone in India or someone in Saudi Arabia or someone in South Africa or Tanzania or Ghana. And so you never know. And plus it broadens your perspective on things, right? You learn to communicate with people that's different than you are and really find out that really you're more the same than you are different, right? I'm pretty sure you're
absolutely
right. You're more the same than you are different. And so once you get those similarities, once you figure out that, hey, they're concerned about the same things I'm concerned about, you know, life, family, perspective, and just get positive attitude that you want everybody to do well. And so we can all do well. We can all win in this thing called life. But once you only start looking at the differences, once you only get one perspective with the person or people that you hang around with, whether it's political, race, religion, then that one perspective you get is all you're going to have. And you're not going to broaden your horizons or grow as a person. And we all have to grow as a person. Let me ask you about this, and I talked to you about that earlier. What is the NOBCCHE?
So, and I'm going to have to look at this real quickly because I mix it up all the time. But it's the National Organization for the Professional Advancement of Black Chemists and Engineers.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think they're on their 51st anniversary now. Mm-hmm. And it was started again, kind of like Novel. Mm-hmm. That a group of chemists and engineers wanted a neighborhood or a community where, again, underrepresented chemists could have a growth and a network mm-hmm. that would provide for individuals. Let me tell you, the conferences are amazing. This year, it was in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
The hotel that they put us up in was, when I say at the end of Bourbon Street, like where Bourbon Street starts. So you walked out the hotel, turned right, it was right there. The conference was amazing. I've been to several of them, as you probably saw on my resume.
Yeah, I did.
It's like Norfolk State. When you hear the term family, and when I hear a company say that, I cringe.
Yes, we all cringe, don't we?
Usually, when a company says, "Oh, we're like family here," we're going to intrude in on your personal life with disregard to who you are as an individual, you know. But in an education and in a conference, it's an uplifting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes a community. When I hear people say it all the time, well, I did it on my own. That's usually an individual that either doesn't or won't acknowledge the people that help them get to where they are.
Right, right.
And the community is so uplifting there. When you go to a typical conference, everybody's just shark mentality. Like they are on their own. Mm-hmm. They are gunning for you. It's a competition to get the job, to win the poster competition, to win the different competitions. Like, they're not there to make friends. They don't care about you. At Nobishe, wow. They're there to help each other out. You make tons of friends. Mm. Still talk with the roommate that I was paired with there. Mm-hmm. Even though I went with probably 30 of us from State went there, they put me with a random. I didn't know who this person was. Mm-hmm. I think from Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And the conference is just, and of course the food.
Well, you're in New Orleans. You had to say, like I said, New Orleans, and people say, "Oh man, Cajun food and all the good food there and seafood there in New Orleans." Woo! That's why I need to stay away from New Orleans. I'm gaining a little bit more weight myself, Sean. There, so I'm trying to stay fit and trim.
This year, it's actually going to be in Orlando.
Oh man!
I'm ready. I've already submitted my proposal and I'm ready to go. But for any of your listeners out there that are in the science community, and you don't have to just be a chemist or chemical engineer. I do have a chemistry background, but I'm mainly a physicist and a material science.
Mm-hmm.
You're still welcomed into the community. The main thing is that you're a STEM. And it's not just for individuals who are Black, women. Mm-hmm. They have a huge presence in the LGBTQIA community.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing is just, it's a community to help those that, it's just to help people.
Right. Help people, especially those people who may not know the information, have the information or know about different forms like that. That can help them with their career and help them go to other areas of they may seek to do things, right? A lot of times it's this information. You just don't have the information there to make a quality decision for yourself to help you with your career or help someone else with their career. And it's about passing along that career that you have, that knowledge, you know, that passion you have onto the next generation. Mm-hmm. And that leads me to segue to the next question I have for you is, how can we get more minorities, women, or people under representation into STEM programs? Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah. Part of it is we have to change our language. We have to get educators to change the language and the expectations that we put onto individuals.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I hear a lot of teachers say, "Don't you think math is hard?" when a young female student wants to start getting into STEM. Like, "Oh, well, it's chemistry, but remember, you know, the math is kind of hard in physics. You know, chemistry is kind of hard." And, you know, it drives me nuts because it's not hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, physics is difficult. Chemistry is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
English is difficult. I have a hard time writing papers. Mm-hmm. History is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
What's hard is knowing that when you drive home, if you're stopped by a police officer, you might not make it home alive. What's hard is trying to navigate the world as a female, knowing that you're going to get paid 70 cents on the dollar to the male, and you're a single mom trying to navigate and raise your kids. You know, what's hard is constantly being told no throughout the world, or being profiled as you walk through a store. Those things are hard. And so for those students, you know, they've dealt with hard. So difficult, that's nothing. Like, and so we need to start, we need to stop putting those limitations on the students, because the second we do that, we shut them down. And they feed off of that. Like, when they're 10, 12, 14 years old, they're in those moments where they're going to take that and just feed off of it, you know, and those seeds of doubt are going to get there. And then I hear it even at the collegiate level where, man, I've got to take physics and it's so hard, you know, and I try to break that down right off the bat. Like, it's not hard, it's difficult. And we're going to get through this together, because if I, at my age and my 30s, can come back from being a nursing student who hadn't touched anything for a decade, you know, can learn physics, then we're going to get through this, and we're going to do it as a community. And so we need to start uplifting and start telling them that you can do this. It's going to be difficult, but we need to start with the language. And then we need to make those programs available for the students. We're starting to see this. When I was a kid, I was always told that the internet's going to make things better. We're going to have connection, and we're going to have all this information. And the more we connect, the better we're going to be. It's made us dumber. I don't know how, because I mean, I can literally pick up my phone and I have access to all the information in the world, right? And if you'd have told me when I was 15, 16 years old, you'll never carry a calculator around wherever you go, so you need to learn your multiplication tables. Remember that lie they told us? But people are dumber. They believe the earth is flat. They don't believe in medical science. They believe the Dunning-Kruger effect. They believe they know better than professionals in the field with pompous.
Well, you know, that's just like, I think it's what you said before. One is, as far as that's concerned, is the information is there and available. They don't have to go look it up, right? We had to research everything back into it, right? We had to go research everything in that big old encyclopedia. We had to go to get microfiche, and people who my age know what microfiche is, you know, back in the library. You had to research and study that thing that you wanted to find out about, rather than having it on your phone, as you said before. And I think the most important thing that you said, and I'm got an interview coming up with two or three teachers, and there's the language. The language, that no matter if you're rural America, if you're in the country, or if you're in inner city, is that language that is hard. You can't do it. It's hard. I don't think you're smart enough to do it. Not knowing, they may have a passion for that. And as you said, everybody have different barriers, especially you're talking about usually English people who love English, who can write real well, not good at math. Usually math people who know math left and right can't write real well. Usually history people, like me, I love history, you know, can't do neither one, but so well, you know. So we all have a passion for stuff, and we may lack in one area, but have a passion for something in another area. And so what you want to do as a teacher is maximize their strengths and minimize their weaknesses. Okay, if they're strong in this point, go 100% there, right? We heard many times where actors say, well, I'm going to be an actor no matter what. So, you know, they burn the bridges, nothing else I'm going to be, and it makes you stay focused. You know, my son want to be a screenwriter. I'm going to be a screenwriter no matter what. I'm not being this and not being that. And he does a job, you know, to make money and ends meet, but this is what I'm going to be. So we can have them focus on that passion that they love. And I always told people, whether it's music or the arts or whatever, okay, they don't make money in ballet. They don't make money as a musician. They don't make money in this. Yeah, but they will find a way to support themselves in their comfortable because they have a passion for it. You know, they have something they want to do. And if you find a passion for it, you love it, you're going to practice over and over again until you get real better, right? Until you get well, you become really professional at that craft. But you will not become professional at any craft if you don't have the passion for it, if you really don't want to do it. You're just going to go through the motions and hope things come up and luckily you get here and there, or luckily you get that acting job, or luckily you get this singing gig, or luckily you get to play in a band and this and that. And a lot of times luck just don't happen. You know, they always say what? Preparation plus opportunity equals luck, or what I call blessing, right? Mm-hmm. You got to be prepared when the opportunity comes. But if that opportunity comes, you're not prepared, then of course you're not going to have a blessing or the luck. Mm-hmm. And so I think the language in which you use as far as teachers, and that's not bad today as it was back in that day. Whoa, they really told you, you know, if you weren't smart, they'll tell you, you too dumb, Johnny. You need to go right over here. Or they will put you in, where I see your grades, you need to go to the lesser class than saying, hey, do you really want to do this? Yes, I really want to study science. I really want to take this class. Or put in lower level English or math, you know. And Johnny may not want to go to lower English math. He may be good at math. Now, he may not be good at English, he may not be good at history, but he loves some math. So instead of us maximizing his passion for math, we minimize and put everything into one category. So now he's in lower class in all of them, and he's bored in math, you know, because I don't even know this stuff. But he didn't get an opportunity to go to the higher math class where it would challenge him and where he found a passion, where he can go into that field that require math and become very successful in that career. Yep. So, you know, it's a shame that we have to go, Sean. I really appreciate you coming on our show. I had so many more questions, but hey, we're going to be here all day.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure meeting with you.
You know, and you would definitely have to come back on our show. I definitely have one on panels I plan to have in the future, but thank you so much for coming on our show today, Sean. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. You have a wonderful day. It's been great.
And I'd like to thank our audience, and thank you, Sean, for coming on our show today. The Education Career Learning Center. I'm sorry, I'm just so fantastic with this interview. It was such a great interview. But thank you for joining us on the Career Education Learning Center, where we're making your career dreams a reality. God bless.